حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. Speaking about ليلة القدر and what it means to us and what we should be doing in ليلة القدر and our attitude towards it is very important in order that we take the benefit of ليلة القدر. Otherwise, many people, they go through ليلة القدر without gaining anything from it. And the idea of Laylatul Qadr, if it's understood, then it is beneficial to us and helps us with our own life and in planning our life. We have a hadith from Imam Jafar al-Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam. In which the Imam said that Laylatul Qadr is on the 19th, the 21st, and the 23rd of Ramadan. He said that there are 3 days, right? The actual Laylatul Qadr is on the 23rd. But the 19th and the 21st are preliminaries for that. And in explaining this, he said that on the 19th of Ramadan, Allah decides the taqdeer, the destiny of everyone. In other words, on the 19th, the plan is made. It's written out. And when you look at the plan, how the plan is, when Allah makes a plan, on the 19th, He makes it. Then when He makes it on the 19th, on the 21st, that plan is ratified. You know, it's ratified, meaning that it's passed. And on the 23rd, it's signed off, meaning that imza is done. Imza means to sign it off, seal it, finish it. So there are 3 days that Imam mentioned. He said that all of these 3 days have a meaning in them. 19th is there for the, you know, the, where the plan is made. 21st is there where it's ratified. And the 23rd is there for it to be sealed. And all of these 3 days, if you look at it, you will see that Allah, if a person who might not be available or who might be busy or he might have had something else to do, or he wasn't able to attend, or he wasn't able to take use of Laylatul Qadr on the 19th, he still has a chance to appeal on the 21st and the 23rd. This is why Allah, He spread it out, in order that if one day we are not able to come, then the next day we can appeal that Allah, I wasn't there, please don't take that against me. Don't use it against me. Hence, you have a chance to appeal on the 21st. You have a chance to appeal on the 23rd. But if in all these days no one shows up and it completely ignores Laylatul Qadr, then Allah, for that person, says that, you know what? He has not taken advantage of Laylatul Qadr. Now we write down what we want to write down for him, no matter what it is. See, this is how Imam explained this. Right? What it is, how it is, and what happens. Right? This is why it's very important that when we have the chance to make use of these nights, all 3 nights, then we should be there all 3 nights. Or sometimes we are unable to. We are sick, or we have something to do. We have a job that we can't leave. So in that process, yes, then there's a chance for that appeal. And say that, Allah, you know, I wasn't able to come, but please don't take that against me. Don't use that against me. So this is the idea of Laylatul Qadr as explained by Imam Sadiq. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. So in speaking about from yesterday, what we had said, is the fact that these muqaddarat and these things that Allah decides and these destinies that Allah has decided for us, right? He decides according to His knowledge and wisdom. And we are unable or incapable of understanding or comprehending the decisions that Allah makes for us. You see, there's one thing that is in our life that is zahir, that is apparent. I see you, you see me. I see the apparent side of you, you see the apparent side of me. What our haqiqat is, we don't know. Well, I'll know what my haqiqat is, but sometimes I'm not honest with myself and I say something that I'm not. But when you look at, there's a haqiqat, there's a reality that is behind closed doors, right? And there's a zahir that we see that's there. My friends, these two things, right, they go on hand in hand with each other. Meaning what is happening in front of us and what is happening behind closed doors. Something. If you have ever been to a play, a drama, right? You see that there's a stage and you see there's actors on the stage and they are playing a part, telling a story, right? But that's not all. Behind the stage, there are many other people working in order to make this reality come up, you know, alive. There's a lot of people working behind the scenes. The director, the stage cast, and all these other people who are working behind the scenes in order that this play comes about. We don't see them. We don't know what's happening. But if it wasn't for them, this play would not take place. You see, this play, it will not take place if it wasn't for them. Many times you see that what we see in this world is being run by what we don't see in this world. What we see in this world, what's happening, is being run by what we don't see in this world. So there's a knowledge that we see and there's a knowledge that we don't see. The knowledge that we see is called the knowledge of Shariat. Ilme Shariat. Right? Or Tashri'i. The knowledge that we don't see is called Ilme Takwini. That's the knowledge that we don't see. We don't see it happening. It just happens. We don't know. But it's happening. And it's because of that knowledge that is ghaib that this appearance and this alam-e-shahadat comes alive. If it wasn't for that, this wouldn't have happened. Now, how does it work? Really, we don't know. But Allah gave a glimpse of it in the Quran. He gave a glimpse of that reality that's happening behind closed doors in a glance to us, a glimpse to us. And he said, this is how it works. And you know what? It's so difficult to understand that even the best amongst us cannot cope with it. Even the best amongst us cannot cope with it. So Allah, He explained this, what's happening in ghaib in relationship to what's happening in alam shahadat or the apparent world in one incident in the Quran. And that was the incident when Musa met Qidr. When Musa met Qidr, you see, this is two meeting of two, you can say, of the prophets of Allah, two awliya of Allah, one Musa, one Qidr. Musa being the master of Shariat and Qidr being the master of Takween, a student of Takween. And when Musa heard that, you know what, there's a knowledge that he doesn't know, he had the yearning to learn that knowledge. So he came to meet Qidr. Now you know the story. I'm not going to go through the whole story. Just the idea that Allah is trying to give in this. What idea is Allah trying to give in this? So Musa, he comes to Qidr. And he tells him that you have a knowledge that I don't have. I want to learn from you. You know, and now when he makes this request, Qidr, he comes with a very offensive answer. Right? He tells him, can't do it. I don't think you'll be able to be a good student. Right? I don't think you'll have the patience to learn what I have to teach you. Musa's like, come on, give me some credit. I mean, Allah appointed me for Bani Israel. I must have some patience. You know? If I have to deal with Bani Israel, who else would be in my place? You know? Khidr, we are giving you the best we have. The one who has the most patience, who dealt with these people. So now you're saying that he's not going to have patience with what you're going to teach him? Come on. Give him some credit that, you know, he's able to come out there and do something. But Khidr is saying, no, you can't. Musa is saying, you know, I do have a very, nice resume here. I mean, if someone was going to be hired for that job of learning under Khidr, who better than Musa? Ulul Adam prophet. A prophet that was appointed for Bani Israel. Allah knows who he's appointing people for. Right? He appointed him. And hence, he has the qualifications to learn. So now what happens is that Musa, he comes there. You know, he says, no, I want to learn. Please, give me a chance. Khidr says, all right. Come on. But, right? You have to be patient. He says, I'll be. Trust me. All right. So they go. Let's start the, you know, learning process. Learning process is that they get into a boat. They're going down the, you know, river. And they come there. Now, Musa is enjoying the ride. You know, he's looking at the river, you know, subhanAllah, this and that. And all he sees is this, you know, Khidr next to him making a hole in the boat. He's like, what are you doing? I'm making a hole in the boat. You know, now, obviously, to Musa, this is completely wrong. I mean, you're damaging someone else's property. How can that be right? What are you teaching me here? I mean, imagine if, like, for example, Maulana says, here, you know, I'm going to teach you some important lessons. He goes out in the parking lot and starts to scratch the crack, you know, the cars there. Learn this, how to scratch a car. What are you doing? You know? I thought you were the Maulana. I thought you were the teacher. And you're teaching me this? So Musa is also thinking the same way. He's like, what are you doing? You're making a hole in the boat. It's not yours. You know? And Khidr says, see, I told you you can't be patient. But, you know, it doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, again, Musa says, all right. You know what? All right. You know? Since you come highly recommended by Allah, so, you know, I want to see where this is going. Right? Musa says, all right, please forgive me this time, right? Go forward. So they go forward and they come across this child. You know, this nice, cute child, you know. And Musa, obviously, looking at the child, oh, how cute he is, this and that, you know, all these things, right? Musa is thinking that way about the child. And here goes Khidr. He goes and actually kills the child. He kills the child. Musa is looking at that. He says, what did you do that for? That's an innocent child. Look at this. Because to Musa, who has the knowledge of Shari'at, Shari'at doesn't allow that. And Musa knows that this is what Allah says. That you cannot take the life of another. This is a child, an innocent child. You're taking his life. How can you do that? He is completely aghast. He is completely upset. He says, what did you do that for? You killed an innocent child. Killed an innocent child. That's it. Kills him. Just imagine that. If someone takes an innocent child and kills him right there in front of you. I mean, like, we'll go berserk, you know. What did you do that for? I mean, it'll hurt us. Right? Musa was the same way. He was hurt. He was like, what did that? And then Khidr right away, see, I told you, you can't be patient with me. You can't be patient with me. Musa was like, all right, you know what? Really, I don't know where this is going. Are you the right guy? You know, really, if we were in that position, we'd be like, are you the real Khidr or are you just making it up? You know, I mean, look at Musa's stand at that point. I mean, his situation is completely, he's like puzzled. So Musa lets this go by. He lets this go by. They go into this place where where you have this obnoxious people, completely obnoxious people, someone who have no reverence, no respect, no honor, shameless people, you know, have no regard for the rights of others. And Musa is so upset with them. You know, Musa is so upset with them, you know, like, you know, okay, you know what? I hate these people, this and that. These people have no reverence, no respect, no honor, no respect, no shame at all. He walks out of there. Hither, walks out with him, goes to the back, and he sees that one of their walls is broken. And he starts to build it. Musa is saying, what are you doing? He says, I'm building a wall for them. See, the wall is broken of their house. I'm building it for them. Musa says, what kind of a person are you? These people are oppressors. These are zalimin. And you're helping them out by making a wall for them? I mean, if I was you, I would be doing what you did to that kid, to these people. Right? Let's get some action on and we too can take care of them. But you're helping these oppressors? You see, now I don't understand it. Your way doesn't make sense. Your knowledge doesn't make sense. You kill the innocent and you're helping the oppressors. What kind of knowledge is this? Because he knows that Allah is saying you can't help. You have to be standing against the oppressors and help the innocent, right? This is what Sharia says. But what Qidr is teaching is that no, helping the oppressors and killing the innocent. You see, this is why Musa didn't understand. He could not understand it. And then when he said that, finally, Qidr said, all right, you know what? Let me put an end to your misery. Alright, let me stop it right here, and we aren't going to go any further. That's it. You can't go any more than this with me. That's it. You cannot go more. I was like, but alright, how come? Alright, you know, I can't go forward. You know, he himself decided, I can't go forward. This is too much for me. I can't go against what Allah has taught me. I can't go against that. So now, at the end, Qidr explains this to him a little bit. He explains this to him. He says, let me tell you what happened. Let me tell you the rest of the story. He says, you saw the boat, me making a hole in the boat. But you know what? There was a, this boat belonged to poor people who worked for it. Their income was through this boat. Livelihood was through this boat. And there was a king who was in a war and he wants to come and he wants to take that boat. That's why I made a hole so that he doesn't take that boat. So this damage I made right now, they'll be able to repair this damage. But if the boat was taken away, it would never have come back. So Allah wanted that they face that little damage right now rather than losing the whole boat itself. See, number one reason. Second reason. He says, this child that you see, listen, every child is cute when he's young. Everyone is cute when they're children. You know, if you had seen Saddam Hussein when he was 5, you would say he's cute. Oh, look at the cute baby. You know? Everyone is cute when they're young. Being cute when you're young doesn't matter. You know? It's who's cute when they're old. That's what matters. Right? Who's going to be cute when they're old? Now, everyone is nice and lovely and, you know, cute and cuddly when they're kids. But when they grow up, what are they going to become? He says, this kid, yes, he's cute right now, but he's going to become a tyrant. And his parents are believers. So what Allah wanted was that he takes this child away from them and give them another child. That's what Allah wanted. So that's why this child was taken away from them and another child will be given to them who would be better for them. Now, obviously, in this situation, understand this, my friends. Each and everything I'm explaining to you, why Allah is doing this, and He's explaining it also. Why we go through trials. Why we go through hardships and difficulties in life. He says, listen, this child, this loss of a child will be hard for them. They will cry because this child is lost. If your child had an accident, he would be lost. Now, what's happening, my friends, is this. In reality, what's happening is that it's an accident that's happening. Or the child died in an accident. He died in the pool. Right? He died over here. You see, we don't know why the reason it's happening, but it's happening. The wisdom behind it's happening. And someone is making it happen. We think it's an accident. It's not an accident. It's being planned. Someone's life is being taken. Someone's life is being given. And it's all happening to us. We don't see it. It's happening behind closed doors. It's happening in ghaib. Same thing. In order to that Allah, okay, He wants to exchange this for another, He will do that. Right now, those parents of that child will go through that loss. But in the long run, that other child will be better for them. And then that wall, right? That wall, the reason I built it is not to help the oppressors, because under that wall was an inheritance of orphans. And I wanted to make sure that those orphans get their inheritance. That they get their inheritance. That's why I wanted them to get. And my friends, now when you look at this whole scene and the whole scenario, what's happening here? What's happening here is that Allah is opening a window into the world of ghaib, into a world that we don't see, that is dictated by its own rules, that are different than the rules of Shariat and the rules of the world that we see right now. It's different than that. And hence for us, yes, we have to go along with the rules of law and the rules that Islam has set forth. But in ghaib, the rules are different there. Things are different there, and hence, but the way it's working with each other is that ghaib and shahadat, apparent and hidden, they're working with each other in such a way that whatever is being left undone in zahir is being completed in the ghaib. Is being completed in the ghaib. That's how it's working together. Allah opens that window for us in this scene and lets us know this is the case. Let's just know this is the case. It's very hard, my friend. It's very hard. You know, Qidr, obviously, you know, we don't act according to ghaib, the laws of ghaib. Qidr was acting according to the laws of ghaib. Yes, you see that innocent child, he had to take his life. Allah told him so. So he took his life. Now, when it comes to those orphans, in order to protect those orphans, he went through and helped the oppressors in order to protect the orphans. Sometimes it happens. Musa's own life is an experience of that. In order to protect Musa, Allah also had to protect Fir'aun to raise him. He was being raised in the house of Fir'aun. So he gave to Fir'aun that you take care of him. Sometimes it happens. But my friends, at the end when we look at it, what is happening in the ghaib, it's something that, you know, we cannot understand. And those who have knowledge of it, their tests and trials are also that much difficult. If Allah gives you knowledge of the ghaib, then your trial is also difficult. For us, shahadat means that, you know, we go, we don't know what to expect. There's chance of that we'll be alive. There's a chance that we will die. But we are taking a chance. We're taking a chance. There's hope that we will live. We go to a war as a soldier. There's a chance that you will live or there's a chance you will die. Based on that chance, you see, there's still that hope. Hey, you know, I'm still alive. And I can remain alive. Right? Even though there are chances of me dying. I don't have ilm-e ghaib. That I know that I'll die. But if you had ilmul ghaib, if you knew you were going to die, if you knew that this sword is going to come and hit you on your neck, now would you take it, knowing that this is what Allah has decreed? And how would you take it? My friends, this is where the trial comes in for Ahlul Bayt. This is where the trial comes in. I know this grape is poisoned. Allah's will is that I take it. And I know I'm going to be suffering when I take it. I know that I'm going to be suffering when I take it. Should I take it now? You see, this is a trial. Those who have ilmul ghaib, it's not a glory thing, you know. Oh yeah, I have ilmul ghaib. Ilmul ghaib is a greater responsibility and a greater trial, my friends. Now when you look at that trial, and when you see, and when you know that Allah is telling you that, listen, this sword is going to hit your head and cut it open, and it will poison you. And then you take it. Now, at times, you know, for example, there are different ways of taking it. Sometimes you can take it, you know, as saying, okay, I have no other choice. But when Allah gives ilmul ghaib to people, He gives ilmul ghaib to those who are deserving. That's why when Imam Ali knew that the sword is coming and hit him on his head, he took it. But the way he took it is that as soon as it hit him, his joy could not know any limits. That's when Imam Ali said, Fustu bi Rabbil Kaaba. Fustu bi Rabbil Kaaba. I'm successful by Allah. Today I'm successful. You see, this is different. You know, you're taking it as a success. Yes. Now I'm successful. I knew this was going to come and hit me. I knew exactly how it was going to hit me. And then I took it and I am successful now taking it, my friends. This is the trial Imam Ali went through. This is the trial Imam Ali went through. Imam Ali's suffering was not easy. It wasn't easy, my friends. His suffering was not easy. He was writhing in so much pain from that poison that Imam Ali was a brave person, a courageous person whose example of courage cannot be equaled by anyone. But the pain was such from the poison that it gone directly into his head and his brain. It was such that it was making his body turn left and right. His body was turning left and right in the pain that he was in. And in all of this, Zainab was watching him. His daughter Zainab was watching him. Umm Kulthum was watching him. And every time that there would be pain, they would go to Ali and said, Father, is there any way that we can help you? What can we do to help you ease this pain? He said, this is just the pain of this poison on my body, but my ruh is not in pain. Do not worry, I'm not in pain. They say, but you look worried right now. So there was a time that came, Zainab said that you look worried and you are in pain. You know, Imam Ali, you know what he said? The only reason I'm in pain right now is not because of the poison hurting my body. It's not because of the ache from the head, the injury in the head. It's because I can hear the suffering of Ibn Muljim, whose hands are tied so hard that he is not able to function correctly. Imam Ali at that point is thinking about Ibn Muljim, that he should not be tied in such a way, open his hands up so he can relax more. Can you imagine that Imam Ali is thinking about him? When they gave him water to drink, Imam Ali said, I will only take this if you give milk to Ibn Muljim also. Go and give it to him, then I will take this. This is Imam Ali. His ideas are different. His way of life is different. His thinking is different. He has ilmul ghaib, but he is in complete submission to that knowledge. And now Imam Ali is suffering in his bed. And everyone is watching him around. Everyone is crying. Hassan and Hussein are there in the room. Zainab and Umm Kulthum, his other children are there. You know, Abul Fadl Abbas was there holding the Quran on his head and making duas to Allah. Abbas was holding the Quran on his head and asking Allah and looking at Imam Ali going through this pain. There was a time when Imam Ali said that, listen, I want to have some private time with the children of Fatima. Everyone else leave, but the children of Fatima. Everyone started leaving. Hassan and Hussein stayed there. Zainab and Umm Kulthum stayed there. And he saw that Abbas was backing away and he was going away and he was going out of the room. Imam Ali said, Abbas, where are you going? Abbas, where are you going? He said, but you said that only the children of Fatima should stay here. Abbas, you have to stay here also. You stay here also. In his wasiyat, Imam Ali, you know, when Imam Ali made his wasiyat, when he made his wasiyat, he was giving everyone, and he said that, listen, after me, Hassan will be your imam.
And everyone, you come here. He took their hands and gave it in the hand of Imam Hassan. He gave it in the hand of Imam Hassan. Everyone's hand was given in the hand of Imam Hassan. The only one's hand who wasn't given in the hand of Imam Hassan was Abul Fadl Abbas. You know, Abbas wasn't given his hand. And Abbas was crying. He was outside the door crying. Ummul Baneen came there to Abbas and said, "What's the matter, my son? Why are you crying here outside?" He said, I think my father doesn't like me. Maybe my father doesn't like me that he has given everyone's hand in he has given everyone's hand in Hassan's hand, but he hasn't given my hand in anyone else's hand." And then Ummul Baneen, she took his hand and said, "Abbas, come with me." She went to Imam Ali and said, "Mawla, tell me, what has my son done that he has not been given to anyone?" Ali said, "Don't worry, I have a special place for Abbas." I have a special place for Abbas. Abbas, you come here. He took Abbas's hand in one place. And then on the other hand, he takes the hand of Hussein. He said, "Hussein, come here." He gives Hussein's hand in Abbas's hand. He says, "Abbas, this is what I have for you in your life. Look after Hussein. Don't let anything happen to my son Hussein." When Abbas heard that, from that point onwards, you see that he would be onto Hussein like a shadow. No matter where Hussein goes, Abbas would be there. Abbas was there to defend Hussein. But when Karbala came, when Karbala came and everyone had died in Karbala and no one was left and only Abbas was there and Hussein was there, he came to Hussein and said, "Mawla, allow me to go in the battlefield." And Hussein, you know what he said? "But Abbas, you are the alamdar, you are the flag bearer of the army. How can you go?" Abbas looked at Hussein and said, "Which army are we speaking about, Mawla? There is no army anymore. There is no army anymore. Now it's just you and me. And I can't let anything happen to you." When Abbas went and died, this was Hussein. That this was Ali's gift. This was Ali's wasiyat and gift for Imam Hussein in Karbala. Abbas was given to Karbala. Imam Ali, now on his last time, and we are bidding farewell to him, inshallah, give your condolences to Imam Zamana. The last moment Imam Ali was breathing his last breath, all the children were around him and they were crying. Imam Ali was so much in pain that his body was moving up and down. He was rolling back and forth. He could not hold himself. The nerves were taking over. He himself was in peace, but his body was in pain and everyone was crying around him. He opened his eyes and told them, "Do not cry over me. I am happy where I am going. I see Rasulullah has come to me and he has extended his hands to me and he's going to take me. And I see all the Anbiya with him. They have come to welcome me there. Do not cry over me." But as soon as Imam Ali, he took his last breath, everyone knew that there was something happened. Imam Hassan was the first one who looked at Ali and said, "Inna lillah wa inna سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون